All right, so what do you think makes you guys special?
That's a great question. I suppose I will try and be as egoless as possible. I think that as a group, we've all kind of come from different bands and come together to be in this band. So you're kind of getting the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, so to speak. So first and foremost, that kind of, I think, sets us a little bit apart from all the other bands that are kind of just like, you know, this is their first try around. This is not, certainly not our first rodeo. So that sets us apart. I think that also the songwriting has a lot of, you know, a very nice combination of us in it, but also keeping in mind the commerciality of the listener who we're trying to write for. And I think that that also sets us apart. You guys want to add into that in any kind of capacity?
Yeah, I think it's the level of musicianship. I'm always very impressed when I show up to rehearsal. You know, everybody knows how to play their instruments very well, which is always a good start. People show up on time, and I think most importantly, we're all excited about the music we're playing. I've played in a lot of bands, and when the songwriting is strong, everything else is just easy. Everything kind of flows the way that it should. So yeah, at the end of the day, we're all having a lot of fun doing what we're doing, and we're really serious about what we're doing, and I think we know the potential of the music, but I think that sets us apart. There are a lot of bands who are really talented, but they don't always show up or show up on time. And then there are people who work really hard, but they just haven't matured yet as songwriters. So I think that's kind of the combination of the two is what sets us apart as well, to the kind of next level. The higher cut, I'd like to think. The creme de la creme. It's a lot about punctuality, really, is what we're saying. Yeah, all you gotta do to be a great band is to show up on time.
There you go.
It's not what I said at all, but that's what makes us. No, it's just a matter of hard work that we're all willing to put in to this project, you know. Really, when it comes down to it, if it's usually like one person or two people that are kind of in it, you know, tends to hurt the whole thing. But really, everyone puts 110% into the project. And, you know, that's something special when you go into a band. It's usually the hard work.
All right. The last time we talked, Dave, you were talking about how, you know, 50s and 60s tunes had a really big impact on you. So if you could kind of like let us know a couple of those tracks that really affected you when you were a kid that kind of paved way to your sound, because you have a very unique voice.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that some of the tunes that shaped my desire to write music, some songs, I would say that if you go back and you listen to the Beatles, like everyone loves the Beatles, right? But there are selected tracks that I think really speak to their love of 50s and 60s music. Anna by the Beatles was like one of my very first favorite, like, oh man, I fell in love with this tune. And they also did there's a recording out there called Live from the BBC, and it's a CD compilation of all of, they used to do BBC radio interviews and live performances, and they did a song that was not written by them that they used to perform in Hamburg when they were doing like kind of variety show stuff in those strip clubs and casinos. And the song is called Don't Ever Change. I don't know who first wrote it, but I guess it's super indicative of the kind of melodies that are inherent in the songwriting. There's a lot of scale steps. It's a lot of just major scale up and down steps, and I really love that. It also really lends itself to harmonies. You can throw when you're doing a major scale walk down, you can throw a third on top of it, and the steps are exactly the same in relation. So the harmonies are just, they're beautiful. So those two tunes, which actually the Beatles didn't write, my father was always a big, he was a guitar player growing up, and when I was young, he used to play Here Comes the Sun all the time. So that song has a really a very emotional connection to me. If we hop to not Beatles music, mm-hmm. I would say that the first time that I heard "Run Around Sue" by Dion and the Belmonts, that was pretty gnarly. I really love that song a lot. And then "At Last" by Etta James. I sung that for my mother's wedding, so that's a song that kind of shaped things for me a little bit. I love really super cheesy stuff like Earth Angel and Unchained Melody. I'm a sappy guy. I'm a sappy son of a bitch.
You
I
think?
Really am.
We've been covering a song live too that's very throwback. The Ronettes. It's Be My Baby by the Ronettes.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah. I figured if we were going to have all these vintage implications and people were going to be like, oh, you have such a retro sound, why not then just take the extra step and do a song that, was from that era? Especially because I think that people, even if they aren't a fan of super old music, everyone's heard that song.
Sure.
Everyone's parents have played it at least once when they're cleaning the house. Or
yeah, it's a staple.
And I think we do like a good job of sort of encompassing what we're all about, sort of the new sound, a new sound with very throwback sound. So we do kind of a rock rendition of it. We have three-part harmonies, but we have, a heavier sound with it. So I think people have really been enjoying that song when they come out to the shows.
Yeah, and we get into it a lot, too.
Sure.
Because, because of the, the enjoyment of that music, we really get into it. So it's kind of like, if you see us play it live and we're really rocking out hard, we're probably rocking out hardest to that song because it's just so much fun to play.
Yeah.
Whereas our other song, the other songs we play, we really just hate playing them.
Do you guys have any plans to release that song, like as a single or anything like that, for people to get into?
I would love for nothing more than for when you think back and you think to the 60s and the 70s, that was like a staple. Is you would have 12 songs on an LP, but three of those songs weren't yours,
mm-hmm.
and that was because they were catering to the audience that was listening to them, but also wanting to have a new audience be like, oh, I know this song from this band.
Yep.
That's why "Twist and Shout" became so popular with the Beatles, because that was an Everly's song, an Isley Brothers song that kind of translated over. I would love to do that. There's a lot of like jumping through hoops, I think, that happens when you kind of do that stuff. You have to get permission to do that. So I think that is a road that we'll cross when we get a record label, but it would be it's a strong desire.
It's fun to do live, but I think what's really cool is that if your original stuff is strong enough, like you don't feel like you need to have that kind of leg up with the covers that a lot of people have. Like, oh, we'll play these so that people feel more connected. But I think people come up after the show all the time and say, "Wow, did you guys cover a lot of music?" And I'm like, "Oh, just one." And I think they're surprised to hear that like the other nine songs were all us.
Yeah.
So that's really, really refreshing compared to other bands that I've played in for sure.
Cool. Aaron and Brandon, I gotta ask you, there's a lot of vocal harmony going on in the band, and your front man's got, like I said, that unique voice, that different register. Is it a challenge to harmonize with them, or do you have to adapt a little bit? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think two-part harmony is a challenge in itself. Three-part is damn near impossible. It's not impossible. It's just a little difficult. And, you just got to be willing to change and adapt
mm-hmm.
for the songs. Dave's vocals are pretty good to harmonize, too. It's just making sure everything's tight.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing with harmonies.
And I think blend is always important. Like you said, his voice is pretty unique. And so I'm always just trying to make sure balance and blend are there. So no one's expecting it to sound exactly like David. We just want to make sure that we're creating a full support on the higher end or on the lower end or both.
Sure.
And just keeping it tight is always a goal. So just, every day I'm running through them and making sure that they're on point. Because you really can't let that stuff
get it rusty at all.
Yeah.
All right, so let's have a little bit of fun. Give me one song on your iPhone or your iPod or your iPad or whatever that you absolutely love, but you're ashamed to tell anybody. Kind of like that Rick Astley or like Hanson song or something like that. Something that's like kind of indicative of like what you bring to the table with this band.
Wants our guiltiest of pleasures.
Yeah,
I think it's funny because I am completely unabashed and unashamed to share with you, Patrick.
Unashamed?
I am not ashamed to share with you all of my dirty laundry. I am a humongous Katy Perry fan. I am so huge and so into Katy Perry, it is disgusting.
I don't need to hear about your dick size, dude.
I didn't say underwhelming. I said underwhelming. I took a road trip and it was really funny because I had brought some CDs in the car that my girlfriend had. I don't listen to a lot of music around her that I listen to in private, so I threw on some Kesha, which was pretty sweet. Some of the B-sides on Cannibal, which is her second studio album, are just fantastic. Like, See You Next Tuesday, and what's the other one? Grow a Pair. Those are great songs.
But yes, for one song that you were ashamed of.
A song that I was ashamed of.
That's tough.
50 Cent in the Club. Guys, I mean,
yeah.
I can't be the only one.
Kind of hard to top.
Probably, you know, I don't think I'm ashamed of it, but like, I listen to Avril Lavigne. I'm a big Avril Lavigne fan, which is great.
There you go. All right.
That's a
I feel like, I'm trying to think of like,
Complicated by Avril Lavigne.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, there you go. I feel like,
you know, I went to school for music and I got a master's degree, so I say, I don't give a fuck. Like, I can like whatever I want. And people have to just accept it. But with that said, I'm a big fan of Party in the USA, and it's almost Independence Day, so I think that's pretty relevant.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Little Miley, less crazy, Miley.
Yeah,
it's Miley, less naked everywhere, Miley.
Yeah, no humping foam fingers or anything like that. Yeah. All right. To get back to some of the other stuff, the goals for this EP. Yes, here he comes. He comes back. Here comes the front man. The goals for this EP, like in a perfect world, what do you guys accomplish with this EP?
When we set out with the EP, so when we started recording, it was never meant to be an EP. It was supposed to be just a song. We started out by recording Thanks for the Memories. And once we recorded Thanks for the Memories, some of the investors were like, this is fabulous, we want you to record more. So we did More Than Friends. And what the fuck are you going to do with two songs, you know? So we decided to do more songs, sans investors, which turned into a very expensive experience, but we got an EP. And the notion with the EP, right, behind an EP is to kind of put your watermark on your brand of music. It's to say, like, hey, listen, this is what we sound like. Well, what do you do with that? It's obviously something, it's what you give to people or you sell to people so that when they walk away from the show, they can now have something to, reiterate the song so they can learn the words, so they can learn the melodies to participate in your shows. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest goals, is to familiarize people with the music. But aside from that, because everything is such a full-on, really work-heavy endeavor for us, we do not half-ass anything. The recording was done super professionally. Everything's really well done. The graphics, the website, the photos, everything is done with a certain air of professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really meant to be as a statement to whomever is looking, because there's always somebody looking, whether it be a record label or a blog or, you know, somebody. It's meant to be a statement, which is that regardless of whether we're unsigned or we're signed or we're, you know, we're just coming out of the gate, you know, because you got to realize we've only been together now for about 9 months. We are completely a force, and we would love to have that backing from a record label to continue to do what we do best, which is to create great music and to continue to promote the brand itself. And yeah, just be professionals about it.
I feel like we're a newborn baby, 9 months, fresh out of the oven. But I think the content is the content is really, relatively speaking, the easy part. And then this is a big hump that a lot of bands are going to face, which is now what? You know, how do we get a big push? How can we shop not just record labels, but licensing opportunities? You know, the music is very commercial, so I think initially we looked at it as, let's record a song, hopefully get some licensing, take that money, funnel it back into whatever the next goal may be. And so, you know, things evolve as you go along, but we've got nothing but positive feedback from our shows and from the EP. And a lot of my friends from all over the place are buying it and giving us good feedback. So, you know, it's really just what now? So I think we have a lot, we're always talking about the next step, the next couple of moves. But I think when you believe in the product, it's easy to, you know, we're going to film a music video, I think, and second music video is coming up, filming it. The second single is going to be Vanity Fair, and we're filming the video at the end of next month. The biggest thing is, too, I mean, Aaron said it when we did the making of the EP, is to get the music out there. It's to continue to grow the fan base. Best way is word of mouth. How do you do that? By playing great shows. Mm-hmm. You continue to play great shows. You move around. You try and play new venues. You try and play with new bands. But I think that a lot of it, again, has to do with putting a professional, you know, I hate to use the word product, but putting a professional product out there that a backer and somebody in the industry can get behind, because no one wants to be on kind of like the losing team. Everyone wants to know that the band that they love, that just came out, that's just brand new, that they're seeing every 2 weeks or every month, they want to know that that band is really making it. They're really doing big things, like right out of the gate. So yeah, like they're going to tell their friends about it, and then their friends are going to come to the show with them. It's an experience, a building experience.
How do you guys think your producer played a role in creating that element on the EP? Because, I mean, a lot of people would kill to have that type of a producer for their first work. So how did that happen?
You know, I think first and foremost, having Stefan on board, we all trust him, which is a big thing. There's always a level of trust. I mean, he's done touring. He's got his own studio here that he's, you know, recording all kinds of EPs. And CDs, and I don't know, I think you can put your faith in somebody if they say, like, I don't know that that's working, what if we try to go with this instead? You know, I mean, he just has a lot of great ideas, and the trust is there.
Yeah, Stefan, I mean, so when you approach working with somebody, you go based on, especially because none of us have ever worked with him before, and it's not like he came out of a recommendation from somebody that we knew that had worked with him before, mm-hmm. So it was really just like a matter of connections, you know, 3 degrees of removal kind of stuff, and then
yeah.
Taking meetings with him and really sussing it out that way. And there was an instilled amount of trust based on just the notion that he worked with such heavyweight people. And yeah, it's a big deal to work with somebody like that on your first EP. It's funny though, because as I have spent, you know, about half my life involved in the music industry in some kind of capacity now, I've worked with a lot of people that have worked with a lot of great people. So that necessarily isn't always indicative of getting something that's going to, you know, be the breaking point in your career.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's interesting too is Stefan was really helping to bridge the gap. You know, David is very influenced, as he said, by artists like Katy Perry.
Love Katy Perry.
And I think I think we all love, you know, pop or pop rock to a certain level. But really, like, the pop, and I'm very much, my background is in rock, so we kind of fuse those together. We're trying to like find a middle ground, so there's sometimes some push and pull. You know, do we want to have a guitar solo here, or do we want to have a heavier riff here, or how do we want to approach how much guitar distortion? You know, the things that make a song more rock. how many of those elements do we want to use and how far do we want to go. So Stefan, I think, is somebody we can trust. And he really gave us exactly what we wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I think a chorus of Vanity Fair is a good example. You'll hear from the music video that we put out next month. Really comes out swinging. I think it's the right amount of both.
Yeah, I mean, when pre-production, when we talked about the notion of making this record, how were we going to make this record, I had expressed my desire to, I appreciate the term pop rock. I think that's a great way to describe things, but I am always on the pop side of things. Mm-hmm. That's where my heart lies, because I think that pop is just essentially pop music. It doesn't really matter if it's rock and it has those implications, or if it's, you know, dance pop. It's pop nonetheless. So having him be somebody who's worked with, like, you know, straight ahead pop, it was always something that I would emphasize, that, like, you know, no matter if this is a rock song at heart, like Vanity Fair, like, I still want to withdraw that theatricality and make it more pop. And he was always super in tune with that and super willing to listen. And then again, just piggybacking on what Aaron said, the trust was completely there. If he was like, well, this is what I want to do with it, you know, I want to make it more like this, then it was all him. It was like, okay, well, you show us how you want us to do it, we'll play it, and that's how we'll do it.
I think, yeah, I need a producer connects the artist with the fans, with the listeners, you know. And so a lot of artists say, this is the hit, and the producer says, I don't think so, I think this is the hit. And sometimes they're both wrong, but I think more often the producer knows what the demand is, and the artist can get really caught up in their own bubble. So I think that's what he did very well, yeah.
All right, so let's continue this conversation in the fact of the next best thing. Let's talk about how that song was written, but then also let's talk about how that song changed once it was in the studio. Is it the same song? Is it different from what it originally was? Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I had the first probably... I knew the chord changes of the song because I wanted to write a song that had those, you know, really stereotypical 50s and 60s chord changes, that 1-6-4-5-1 chord change. I wanted to update it quarterly, so I added in the flat six. Thank you, Aaron. so I wanted to add that uniqueness to it. And I think it has really, in terms of, you know, through the years, because it's probably almost about 3 years old, that song now. It hasn't really changed in its heart and its soul. The song is about being in a relationship with somebody and really yielding who you are to be able to be who they want you to be. And that, you know, that's really the message that I think is very, pretty concisely conveyed, which is like, just tell me what you want me to do, I'll be that person, and then I'll be happy. So it's definitely coming from a place of like losing yourself in the relationship that you're in. And Brandon and I had demoed the song back in New York probably 2 years ago, and I think if you were to A/B, you know, what we had recorded from what we have now, very little has changed.
I gotta say, structurally, Brandon, maybe you can attest, but early on, it sounds from the recording, it's always been kind of a pop rock tune. There's always crunchy guitar chords. And I'd say the bridge, you know, we come out with the guitar solo, and then the second time through the guitar solo, we all sing along to it as kind of a chant or an anthem. And so I think that initially was just pretty much singing with a little bit of guitar in the background.
Yeah.
And then just structurally, we come out of the solo, it used to kind of go back to the verse one more time.
Yeah.
Very soft. And now it just comes out swinging right into that kind of pop final chorus.
When I write, because I'm not quite as musically accomplished as my coworker here, Aaron, because I don't have a master's degree in guitar performance, I think that I use the tool that's most familiar to me, which is voice.
Mm-hmm.
So in coming to that area of the song where we do that, you know, guitar solo, that was really my best effort to try and write a guitar solo. And the only thing that I could use at the time that made sense was my voice. So we wrote this, when we listened back to the demo, it's, you know, two identical kind of chant lines with guitars behind it, and that is because, you know, the guitar solo, which is what you hear now, was started out as a vocal kind of solo with guitars behind it.
I'm always a big advocate for having the right breathing space, whether it means, you know, guitars cut out, just give you drums and vocals for a bit, which the next best thing has. But for me, it was like, we need a break vocally, you know, otherwise it's vocals front to back. So, like, little things like that, I feel like I always wanted to try, and if I felt strongly about them, I wanted to, you know, I wanted that to end up on the album. Like, let's just do the guitar solo by itself, live. You think about the live show, it's always important. You know, David can go, he's not glued to the mic the whole time. He can go and get the crowd amped up or whatever, dance around. And it's a moment for the, yeah, for the sort of the rock side to come through, I would say.
Awesome. What do you guys think you bring to the table in a live setting that doesn't show in the studio?
Go ahead, Brandon.
Brandon's kind of wild. Well, you know, it's just... Yeah, I do have some worries. Well, you know, it just really, at least for me, when I start performing, it's what we usually bring. I don't know, it feels like something new. You know, when you try to reinvent the wheel sometimes, you know, you try to use some older ideas like the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. and try to bring it into the modern era, you know. Many bands have done it before, but I don't think quite like this, especially at this time, you know, especially when a lot of things right now are, how can I say, like hipster music, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, I really feel that rock, that edginess, but still with like an elegant taste. You know, something that we bring.
I always feel like if I go to a show and the band is doing their thing and they come in with strong vocal harmonies, for me that already sets them apart. It always makes me want to listen to what they're doing. Because I'm like, okay, well, these guys actually have an ear for music. It's amazing how many local bands go out and watch and what they can sort of, like, they can put a band together and they can have a show, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that their level of musicianship is...
You know, the three-part harmonies, I usually think, is what kind of makes it stand out. You really don't hear that many harmonies, sometimes two, but, you know, usually they never go to, like, the third.
We want to really bring a wall of sound, I think, so we want a chorus to come in and just be big in as many ways as possible, you know, to have these textures, all these different frequencies. You got lead guitars, rhythm guitars, lead vocal, and then, like, an under harmony, an over harmony. So we want just a lot of sound coming at you to leave people with a good taste in their mouth.
I think the question being, like, what is different? First of all, what sets us, you know, what makes a live performance? Well, like, a live performance is not, is like, just by nature, not a studio performance, just for the sheer fact that when you hit play on something that's already been recorded, you're already just getting the same performance over and over and over again. That's mm-hmm. the fundamental difference, is that consistency is there. When you play live, the best thing you can do is to evoke, right? That's why we practice. We practice so that when we get up live, we can lose ourselves in the music that has been rehearsed so heavily and just evoke, be evocative. And so by nature, the best thing you can do in a live performance is be a little different than record. And conversely, when you talk about the idea of, you know, recorded sound versus live sound, the difference being that when you go into the studio, you don't have to be married to what you've been doing live for the last 6 months. Case in point, Vanity Fair. I mean, when that song was conceived and when we started playing it live, it had a much more rock edge to it. And then when we went to the studio, you know, in the demos, I had harpsichord in place of, you know, electric guitar, because that was the theatricality to it. And that's really what I wanted to bring to the studio recording of that song, was that, like, you can have a recording of a song that has harpsichord on it. Doesn't mean that anyone's going to play harpsichord live, but we can supplement that with an electric guitar live, and suddenly that song that you come to know is having harpsichord on it and having a very posh, pop, production on it.
It's like an electric guitar solo.
It's alive now. It's got like a very much more, it takes on a much more rock edge to it. So there's that duality that just inherently will be there, and that there's the duality that you want to be there.
You know, I think David, from the beginning you brought in, when we first met, I was just taken by the songwriting. So I feel like it's really our role, especially, you know, Brandon and Kyle and my role, is to, bring the sort of the rock and the live. You asked about the live show. I think we're always working on it. You know, we've taken songs that from the album, you know, we'll cut into halftime for a certain section of it, just because live, it just rocks so much harder. So that's what people come out for. They come out for that energy. The melodies have always been there. So now it's like, okay, well, how do we take something that was very singer-songwriter in a lot of ways, and how can we make this a band now? How do we make it feel like a great live show? And so, yeah, I think that those things have shown up in the album, but definitely, even since recording the EP, have shown up live, the way that we're arranging the music.
All right, great. Brandon, I'm going to ask you, because you're the quiet guy, I'm going to let you give the final smackdown over here. Why should someone pick up this EP? Bottom line. Sell it to me.
Because if you want to hear good music that's different from what you hear on the radio, then that's why. It's the best music you have heard in the last 10 years.
Do you guys want to add to that?
That's why we don't let him talk.
No, you didn't. Oh, you guys messed up, man. You did good, Brandon. Don't worry about it.
You did good, man.
It wasn't special. It was great. It was good.
He's not wrong. I think that to say that your own music is the best music that you're going to hear out there is pretty subjective. I think that part of what he said is right. I mean, it is different than what you're hearing on the radio. But isn't that really what it is? You know, you're not going to hear it on the radio because it's not on the radio yet, set aside from, you know, a handful of college radio stations. But having said that, I think the reasoning behind why you should pick up the album is because
it's going to be worth a lot of money.
Because it's a very earnest depiction of some real life feelings. I mean, I always try and write about things that are honest. You know, when I write about like being in the club and like popping bottles and stuff like that, it comes across as insincere. So I can't really write about that stuff anymore. I really write about the stuff that resonates within me, heartbreak and love and you know, women and I think that if you are at all in tune with those very real things, then you're definitely gonna like this.
I was just, as early as this morning, I got a text from an ex-girlfriend who's really kind of, after catching up the other day, after it's been several years, you know, how you doing, how you been, I'm good, you know. And she was just curious about what we've been up to, and so she went ahead and bought the EP, and she said the words are so relatable, you know, about what it's like to be dating in your 20s. And you know, I was kind of texting her about how proud I think we are of like the imagery, you know, like Empty Space is a real art, that really pulls on the strings. It's a real heart wrencher for me. So like, if anybody who's really had a good heartbreak, together we built this home in a castle made of sand. Slowly I've watched it wash away. In the waves right through my hands. Like, that paints a picture right away. And it really just hits the nail on the head, I think, lyrically. So I think it's something that a lot of people can connect to. And I'm getting so much feedback all the time from people, friends, people from my, you know, old and new, from my past, who are, like, really excited to listen to it. And, you know, their very young kids are enjoying it, dancing to it, letting me know what their favorite songs are. And so it's cool to see what's hitting, and it's not always what you would expect, you know. Everything, it's always different what speaks to people. So they might point out a certain part of a certain song that I wouldn't have expected them to connect with. So that's cool.
I mean, it's funny. Just on that topic, I get people all the time that tell me how the James Hotel is such like a it's such a great song. They love that song. They love hearing about the James Hotel. And, like, you know, I never expected that song to be their favorite song or anyone's favorite song. You know, I just wrote a song about a hotel and an experience in a hotel. And even just when he was saying about Empty Space.
Well, it's a song about passion. This is a song about a hotel, David always says on stage. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, it's a song about an experience in a hotel. But, you know, when you talk about a song like Empty Space and you talk about heartbreak, like, those are real feelings. Those are things that I felt when I was writing that song. And so, I mean, I always laugh when you hear songs on the radio about shit like people, you know, popping bottles in clubs and stuff. It's just, it's okay. You know, you can subscribe to that and feel like that resonates within you. But I think the thing that people probably take away from the music that I write and that the music that I play is that, like, no, this is fucking reality. Like, get your head out of your ass. Like, no one has the money to, you know, pop bottles of Cristal at the club. That shit isn't real. What's real is that, like, when somebody takes your heart out, you know, sets it on fire, crushes it, kicks it to the curb, and pisses all over it, like, it fucking hurts. So, you know, that's what I try and write about.
So that,
and that's why you should buy this album. Because I've had my heart pissed on, too.